hello to all of you out there in podcast land. This is the Front Row Network. I'm Brandon Davis, and actually, I've been thinking about it. I think in the entire history I've been with the Front Row, this is the first episode of Full Disclosure I have hosted. So nice to chart new territory.
Don't screw it up.
No, I won't. I promise. This is a movie I'm very excited to talk about. A movie a lot of us are very excited to talk about. We'll be talking about Knives Out today, which was just released Thanksgiving weekend, and getting great buzz so far, especially among all of us who have seen it here at the Front Row. I have with me Craig McFarland. How's it going, Craig?
It's going so well. How are you today, sir?
Oh, just fine. I'm in the dysfunctional family holiday spirit after seeing this movie.
Absolutely.
And also with us, and I think this is the first time he and I have been on a podcast together, is Ryan Lutens. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Brandon. Yep, this is our first time together.
We actually met last month, but yeah, this is our first time being on a podcast together.
We're taking it slow.
Yeah.
That 500th episode was so much fun to see that these people actually exist. And, I was going to mention we were going to have a fourth with us, Phil. I think he bailed on this Full Disclosure because he's actually somewhere in one of our houses messing with our medical bag. But still, it was nice to actually finally meet many of these people. Obviously, Ryan and I know each other going way, way back. But it was cool to meet Phil and Aaron in real life. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's fun that we all come from a bunch of different perspectives here, and that we can just sit and talk about these films. And it's always nice when the movie that we're talking about is good. And this is better than a good movie. I think this might be my favorite movie I've seen all year. And so I'm really, really interested in getting to talk about it. We'll start with you, Ryan, though. What were your first impressions of Knives Out?
We should say real quick, just because to bombard your hosting, but we should say this is going to be full spoilers. From here on out and all of that. And so if you haven't seen the movie, you definitely should go see the movie. And then, because there's no way you could talk about this movie and not spoil it. So,
Chris, thank you.
I was going to say that, Craig.
Sorry.
No, I was going to say thank you for saying that, because I'm used to talking about movies that are 50 years old, that if you haven't seen them, it's your fault. So.
and as you should, because this movie is going to age very, very well. And it does fit the mode of, a classic murder mystery. When I was watching, I was thinking Third Man, Maltese Falcon. It just had that feel to it. But when I was watching this film, I love thrillers. I love horror movies. I love figure it out movies. And when I was watching this movie, I was like, okay, it's got to be this person. And it makes it pretty clear that it's this person. I'm not going to say it just yet. I'll let Craig spoil it. Spoiler alert. But in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is very clear cut. But what Rian Johnson does is he crafts a story, a mystery, with this great ensemble. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, Don Johnson, the girl from 13 Reasons Why, Toni Collette, Ana de Armas. I mean, just this cast is loaded, topped off with Daniel Craig. Holy crap, Daniel Craig. But I mean, we'll get into that later. But this movie does a really good job of being a mystery, but not being a mystery. Really, it's going to go down as one of the best movies of 2019. And, I told Craig, Craig doesn't like that I like Crawl. Crawl got knocked off my list because I saw The Irishman. But Knives is definitely a top three favorite movies, just because it was a very good whodunit. It was a very good mystery, but more importantly, it didn't take itself too seriously, and it was a great comedy.
Absolutely. Craig?
Yeah, it was a fun fun movie all around, because we got to just have a real true escapism type movie. It's why you go back and watch Clue, and it's why you go back and watch some of these outrageous performances that are just there for the sheer enjoyment of film and being able to not be gloomy about something, not be tense about something, but it's funny. It's a murder mystery whodunit that is truly a comedy, and at no point does it seem tense. It's all it's all written so well, and then delivered so well by this whole cast. And there's really not a single player who doesn't really shine throughout the movie. They all get little bits and pieces. Just Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, it's been a minute since I've seen her act in anything, because I don't watch the Halloween movies. And so it's great to see her on the screen. Chris Evans, obviously man after my own heart as Captain America, but I think it's so good for him to be able to leave that Captain America role. I know that, in the marketing of this film, you know, because in Endgame, of course, they said that Captain America had America's ass. Well, this was America's asshole. So I love that that was the way that they went with it. And his sweater is just on point the entire time. Daniel Craig is incredible in this movie. The list goes on and on and on and on. I will tell you that Ryan, I believe it's Ryan Johnson, not Rain Johnson.
No, you're right. But
Ryan Johnson just did such a good job of writing this and directing this. I got to tell you, outside of a large motion picture he directed a couple of years ago, I absolutely love Ryan Johnson through and through. Brick is one of my favorite movies, but I think that this one I enjoy even more than Brick. And I didn't think that that was possible out of him. It's wonderful.
No, I was gonna add Craig, but it's been a long time since we've had a piece of clothing in a movie become iconic, and I think that his sweater is gonna be right up there with Audrey Hepburn's little black dress. But
here's my thing: this guy is rich, and he can't afford a sweater that's not whole. I mean, holes in the sleeves, holes in the neck, like.
I bet if you looked online for a sweater that was similar to that, it would be in the hundreds of dollars.
Right.
Because it's like all the cool kids, you know, with all their holes in their jeans. Like, I'm sure that those are like prefabricated holes, moth holes in the sweater. And that sweater is probably like $1,000.
Yep.
In fact, while one of you are talking and I don't, and you know, if it's something that I'm not all that interested in, I'll look up a price of a sweater for you. Ryan, I'm going to guess it's going to be you. So when you start talking at some point, I'll probably chime in with a sweater cost.
Thanks.
No, what I was going to add was all of the classic murder mystery movies that seem to hold up are movies that just don't pay attention to the mystery by itself. It's all the details. And Rian Johnson, whatever you want to say about The Last Jedi, it was an incredible looking movie. He knows how to make a movie look good. This movie looks incredible. Just the atmosphere, the way everybody looks in the movie. It's just got great detail all the way through. And it's just, the journey is fun. And that's what's important about murder mystery movies. You have to enjoy the journey. It's not just about getting to the very end. It's how everything else comes about. And of course, as I alluded to before, you know, this is a classic whodunit format, but unlike a lot of whodunits, spoiler, you find out who did it a quarter of the way into the movie. And
dogs.
Yeah. And then from that moment on, it's a little bit jarring to someone who, what, Craig, did you find something?
No, I'm sorry. I did. And it's funny because I found that these are all look-alike sweaters, that are a myriad of different prices. From Topman, there's a $65 sweater. J. Crew has a $138 sweater. Amazon Essentials, if you want to go the real cheap route, $26.78. L.L. Bean has a sweater for $180. So really a sweater for all price ranges. It's a very egalitarian way to be able to look like Chris Evans. All you need is a vibranium shield to go along with your sweater. And then truly, you at that point are Chris Evans.
Did you say J. Crew? Give me a minute.
I did say J. Crew. J. Crew, I believe, was $140.
Does that come with moth holes?
It looks great.
With moth holes?
You know, I don't know. Further investigation is warranted. I totally derailed Brandon from a great topic here, so I'm sorry.
That's all right. No,
to get us
all
off the rails. At least we got the sweater talk out of the way at the beginning. Won't bring it up more than four more times before this is done.
No, that's all right. What I was going to say was, though, I've loved murder mysteries all my life, and I'm a big Agatha Christie fan, and I see it. But a couple of years ago, we had the remake version of Murder on the Orient Express, which didn't really do it for me. I'm a big fan of the original from the 70s, but I think that Kenneth Branagh really got into too much of the science of the mystery of it all, and made it too much, you know, and he didn't make it enjoyable. And it was like everyone was just in glorified cameos, and you have this huge cast and they didn't contribute much. Everybody in this movie contributes, and everybody has a purpose. Everybody has a point. This is a movie that also delves into the politics of our current situation right now, but it's not overt. It's not over our, it's not, you know, hitting you on the head or anything. But it's just a fun commentary, and one scene in particular, which I'm sure we'll talk about later too, but yeah, just all around. And, it's a movie that just really, really left me leaving I haven't left the theater in a while feeling really upbeat about an original movie in a long time. And this mm-hmm. is one of those where I'm like, man, there's hope. There is hope. I'm just thrilled by it. Anything else, like overall big picture, that you all want to add before we delve into the actual cast, though?
I'd say that – go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, thanks, Craig. I liked how you said, like, we knew who it is, which we'll get into probably when we talk about what we like. But the rest of the movie was how it all happened, which is what a mystery is all about. I mean, you learn the ins and the outs, and I'll talk about later the donut hole analogy. And that's what the whole movie was.
It was fantastic.
So yeah. Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I gotta say, what's really interesting about this film in particular is that, the amount of money that it's bringing in. So a lot of people have been decrying, and you know, we've got this whole Scorsese argument that has at least erupted and taken over all of the topics on our threads, at least between all of us. And Scorsese's argument is that superhero movies are pushing out these smaller, lower budget films, and they won't be seen. Knives Out so far has made $54 million domestically, and it's made $85 million worldwide. And you know, that is quite a cash cow for something that was made very cheaply. Are you holding up two to say that it was made for 2 million? It was made in 2 weeks. Or no. Oh, for 2 weeks of release. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know, it's only been out it's only been out for a relatively short amount of time. Obviously Frozen took the Thanksgiving Day box office, but really Knives Out helped propel the box office to where it started to get out of this slump that it's been in the early part of November. So just, it is good to see that an established filmmaker can come out and deliver. Now, granted, he had quite the cast, but Ryan just sent a message saying it was made for about $40 million. It's already made double that. Now, we know marketing is going to be quite a bit in there too, but it's going to make money. And so it is cool to see this type of film get a theatrical release, because this easily could have went to a streaming service with the way that the world is going now. I mean, we've got Marriage Story, we've got The Irishman, we've got all of these countless movies that we're going to talk about in the award season that went to a streaming platform. So good on the studio, good on Rian Johnson for getting this into the theaters, and good for us to be able to see it on the big screen.
Right. And as we segue here into talking about the cast, though, just want to say whoever did the marketing for this movie did such a good job, because if not only did it make it out to be that this was going to be a traditional whodunit, but I had no idea that Ana de Armas was going to be the central focus of this movie. There was no clue in any of those trailers, and once the movie takes that turn and you realize this is her story, I thought, man, this was so brilliant that he did it this way. And she's been around for a few years, but I think this is a star-making turn for her. And this is really going to propel her as she's going forward, because she, with the huge star power around her, she carried this movie. And it was amazing to watch. And she's so rootable. And you were just by her side the whole time. Any thoughts on her, Craig?
Oh, she was so wonderful. And I went back to IMDb and I looked. I didn't see Blade Runner 2049. She had a role in that. She's done several other smaller pictures, but I did see that she's paired up with Daniel Craig in the upcoming Bond film as well. I don't know with the direction the Bond is taking. I don't know if there is a traditional Bond girl, if she's going to be it, or because 007 will be a woman at some point in this movie, if there's not going to be that traditional what we think of as a Bond girl. But very cool for her. She does such a great job acting this out, and it's such a fun it's cool that they make her into the human lie detector because of the whole vomiting thing, and that could be such a cliche just gag, or pardon the pun, but you know, it comes off as really innocent in the way that she does it. It's very cute. And so I think that that's why it doesn't turn into this just kind of like overdone little thing. But you hear like the stomach gurgles, and it's not ever overly grotesque either, except for at the very end. But at that point, you want it to be.
Yeah.
Like when she throws up in Chris Evans' face, you kind of are rooting for that at that point, right? So even me, who hates that kind of comedy, loved that moment. So I thought that was very funny.
That's what I was going to say. I hate gross out bodily function type comedy, but this was written in an intelligent way and a logical way. And because it's a character you're rooting for, it totally works. And I didn't mind it. And I couldn't believe that I didn't mind it, but it just goes to show you how well this was written. Ryan? Mm-hmm.
Well, and see, like what you guys are saying with the gag, I mean, this was a great plot device. The fact that we know that she has a tell, it's her throwing up. Whenever she lies, she throws up. The thing with this movie is you never see her throw up. You see her take like a soda, it was a 7-Eleven drink, and then it was like an ashtray. But the moment you see her throw up, she's throwing up on the person who did it. Yep, Chris Evans did it. There's your spoiler. But it's just so satisfying that when you actually see the vomit, it's on the person. Like it's tell, like it's him. It was always been him. So I mean, it was just really satisfying. You know, she's gotten her start in horror movies. I think she married Eli Roth. I think they're divorced now, but she did Knock Knock and she did Aftershock, which were all with Eli Roth. So to see her blossom in this film, I mean, she's got a career ahead of her, because her acting was flawless. And I think a lot of that had to do with the great ensemble cast that she used to bring out her true talent. It was just phenomenal just to watch this cast act together.
It takes an awful lot to get us to know this character right away. Basically tell us that she is the reason why Christopher Plummer dies. And you still are rooting for her, maybe only like a quarter to a third of the way through the movie. You're rooting for her so much that you want her to get away with the murder, much like Christopher Plummer did, because that chemistry is just automatic. Like there's the scene where they're talking kind of out by, I don't know if it's out by the lake or if it's just in some like Adirondack type chairs, where it's Christopher Plummer and her, and they're just, it's just so great what they're doing in that scene, because it helps establish for you this trust with the character. And she does that by being so quiet and reserved in her acting too. Like it just, everything about it is just picture perfect. It really helps you develop the love of the character, even at an early stage in the movie, which is what you need if you're going to basically turn a whodunit on its head and say, we're going to tell you who did it, or at least you think you know who did it. And now we're going to see if she can get away with it. And it was great.
That whole scene with her and Christopher Plummer, to me, was just one of the standouts of the movie, because you just feel for her this minute she realizes what she's done. You feel that pain.
And that whole scene in the attic.
Yeah.
when she's sitting there listening, sorry to cut you off right now.
No, you're fine.
But I was just going to go, when Christopher Plummer is giving his monologue and she's just sitting there listening, like, I felt like she was listening to her grandfather tell a story and she's just sitting there working. So, I mean, it was just awesome to see on the screen. So I'm sorry, Brandon.
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah. I was just going to say that scene was so compelling because here you have this 88-year-old veteran and this, you know, young newcomer just holding their own together with such great chemistry on the screen together. That was an exciting scene for me to watch because the two of them just pulled that off so brilliantly. And the fact that his character kept his cool, even though he knew that he was just minutes away from death, plotting this, you know, incredible, you know, foolproof way for her to get away, was just really, really fun. And it's not something I've seen, I don't think, in many murder mystery movies, you know, that I can think of. The other thing, the reason I'm excited for Bond is because she has such great chemistry with Daniel Craig in this movie. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to see them together in this movie. And I think it's a good time just to move on to the other lead, really, of the movie, and that's Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc, one of the best original characters I've seen in a movie in a long time. Just definitely on the page by Rian Johnson, but you can tell that Daniel Craig put so much of himself into the creation of this character, and he's so fun to watch. I love the overblown accent. I love his reasoning, his way of speaking, and I want to see more of him. I definitely do.
Totally agree. I hope, like you said earlier, Brandon, that this becomes like a reoccurring character. I will tell you, the second he opened his mouth, I was like, oh no, this is the accent they're going to give him. This is what he's going to do the whole film. And I was concerned because it was so over the top and so drawn out. But it seems to work. You know, maybe it's jarring at the beginning because we're used to James Bond, and it's the opposite of that. Also, given just his name, I didn't expect him to have like this weird Southern drawl. Like when they had introduced his name, for whatever reason, I just didn't think that he was going to be like the Southern man. So it was a bit jarring for a second, but then after that, just kind of smooth like butter, man. It just kind of melted in on the rest of the film, and his performance was just so remarkably good. I mean, it was. And I'm going to sound like a broken record on all of these actors because they, like I said, I think that they really enjoyed this film, and so I think that they brought what they wanted to, and they brought their A game because they were all. I think that this would have been an awesome set to be on because it just seemed like they were all having a really great time with one another. And that translates a lot on the screen to me.
Yeah. You know, Chris Evans said it best with that accent, Kentucky Fried Foghorn Leghorn. I mean, that line stuck out to me because it's like, this is what Rian Johnson really wanted to go for. Like he made it over the top for a reason. And I bet the note was in the script was just probably over the top Southern accent. And he let Craig run with it, and holy crap, his characterization of this detective, you know, who's got a very French sounding name, Benoit Blanc, and from Kentucky, I mean, just his mannerisms, everything seems so calculated with him. Like when you're watching the film, you're like, okay, I'm ready to go on this journey with him of discovery. And when he's outside talking about truth with Marta, right? Marta.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cinematography and just the speech, everything about that was him, you know, and you can always tell that you can always pin a scene when it comes to acting. Like when you say, oh, you know, he's nominated for best actor because of this. I would not be surprised if that was his moment because that scene with the cinematography showing half his face, talking about truth and lies. I mean, it was just, I was floored. I was riveted, you know, not like tense, like, oh my God, who's the killer? I was like, this is captivating to watch because of what's going on screen right now.
Yeah, there's something about the way that he speaks and his speech patterns and everything where I'm like, man, Rian Johnson should write novels. This is so literate.
Yes.
And so amazing. And so amazing. I'm like, and his summation at the end, the way that he unmasks Chris Evans and everything, it just works so brilliantly. And like I said before, this is a character I can watch in a series of movies. I just want to see, you know, Benoit Blanc become the next Sherlock Holmes or, you know, Poirot, all that stuff. But yeah, just absolutely fantastic. And it's so fun to see Daniel Craig out of his usual realm and to see him do something and just completely create something new. It was just fantastic. And then we've got, you know, the rest of the cast. And as you said, Craig, everyone just seemed like they were having so much fun. And it was like they all were just relishing being just despicable and nasty. And it was just absolutely fun to watch. And you mentioned Jamie Lee Curtis, and I think this is one of the best things she's done in a long time. Mm-hmm. And just so great. And I loved her chemistry with Don Johnson, the two of them together as husband and wife. And it was great to see Don Johnson get something to do that was really, really, you know, different than what we're used to seeing him as well. But yeah, and any of the other members of the cast that are real standouts to you, Ryan?
You know, the siblings. So yeah. You've got Jamie Lee Curtis married to Don Johnson. You've got Michael Shannon. Yeah. Holy crap, he was great.
It's great.
Married to, I forget her name, but then you have Toni Collette, who's a widow of one of the other sons, but hippie chick Toni Collette wins in my book. Every time she was on the screen, like, I was just cracking up. But the chemistry just between those adult actors and then their siblings, so Chris Evans, the girl from 13 Reasons Why, and the kid from It, I mean, you'd believe that they're a dysfunctional family. Like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't think that they've only known each other for like 2 solid months filming this movie. But I mean, everything was just—it just seems so real. Like you're just watching what's going on. Like you're just a silent observer. But I mean, something has to be said for Michael Shannon. You know,
yeah.
One of the greatest supporting actors out there, and his performance in this was just so subtle. You know. The sleazy, hey, dad, let's do this. I want to make more money. Hey, dad, give me the publishing company. But then when he confronts Marta in the hallway, you're like, he is a villain. And that's where I started, because, you know, mm-hmm. there was a clue with Chris Evans and the dogs right away, right when Chris Evans showed up. That's when I was like, oh, it's Chris Evans. When I started to doubt myself, and I said this on our thread, that's when I started to doubt myself. When he was in that hall and just the light contrasting on Shannon's face and how he was slamming his cane because he had a broken leg, I was like, holy crap, it's him. And that's where Rian Johnson gets you, because he literally makes it where everybody had a motive except mm-hmm. for Marta and Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
And that it was just beautifully written with that ensemble. I mean, it makes me question, like, and I can't wait to hear the commentary, like, did he write this movie with these people in mind, or did it just all fall together?
Yeah. See, I thought Chris Evans originally, oh, he's just a great distraction that you think, you know, is, you know, because he's the black sheep of the family, he's the obvious choice. And then you begin to doubt yourself. And then once it turns back around to him, I'm like, oh, that was constructed really, really well. But I just love seeing, you know, Chris Evans, this had to be a great release for him to play, you know, mm-hmm. Captain America all these years, to get to finally be just a, you know, just scum of the earth. And it's just,
so, he knows it too.
That's the great thing about it. And you know, just and his reaction shots in this movie were just great. Just to see him sitting in the corner, just watching everybody self implode on each other, was some of the best stuff in the movie. Craig, any of your favorites?
You know, we've gone over a lot of them. I was going to say, what do you mean, Ryan? Wasn't Gwyneth Paltrow in this movie? You know, because it was such a great, and that was what was cool about it. I mean, that's a comment I wanted to make, was that, in a way, this is a bit of a timepiece movie now, because the decision was made to make these characters so modern and so of the current time frame. Whodunit could be very timeless and kind of set in any given moment. But, you know, you've got the neo-Nazi fascist guy, kid, who's on his phone all the whole movie. And it's funny because he doesn't even say anything that's like a super alt-right or anything like that, but you can believe it just because of the way he's dressed, like, in the way he's like on his phone. And then, you know, you've got the great, essentially the creator of Goop. I mean, you really do have, like, he basically wrote Gwyneth Paltrow for that character. And, you know, so it is really cool to see like these modern characters brought into it. You alluded to the scene earlier, Brandon, but the Thanksgiving dinner scene, you know, it's funny because this movie is released at Thanksgiving and so many people are sitting in that theater having just had the same conversation that they're having around the table the night of the memorial, which is like everyone, I mean, everyone's talking about the current president, the current administration, what's going on, his policies, immigration, like this stuff that we don't want to talk about. So it's funny that he put it into the movie in the way that he did.
But no names are mentioned. So in a way it is timeless because you might be able to infer anything years from now or whatever. So
that's very true. And, you know, we'll see where we are years from now. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but you know, I do think it was just so, such a great release and such a funny way to insert his own politics into this as well. Because I think that, in addition to just great writing, Rian Johnson obviously has a point of view that he wants to get across here. I mean, he did make the immigrant with the undocumented mother, the hero of this tale. And he made a point to make sure everyone knew that that's exactly who she was. So, you know, that's another like checkbox to me of like great filmmaking, great writing is to be able to insert something that you're passionate about as well, but do it in a way that it's not so over the top and beats you over the head with it, but instead uses it as a plot device or as just a comedy bit. And to me, just all around, again, I can't speak enough about this film. If it doesn't win Best Screenplay at the Academy Awards, I'm going to scream because it's just so tight in the way that it's written.
Yeah. You know, when you were the subtlety of Rian Johnson too, is they're having that discussion that you just talked about, Craig. And then to make a point, Don Johnson's like, yeah, Marta, come here. She did it right. She's here. She's legal. She's working. We all know that her mom's not legal. So it's like everything that, you know, you're saying that everything is okay, but really it's really not. So,
he's making those assumptions, right?
Right.
Like he's, you know, he doesn't know. He doesn't. It's fine. And there's so much subtext there because it's so much good. Like, it's so much like, you know, the people that rail against certain people and then they're like, oh no, but you're fine. Oh, I have a friend that's XYZ, you know, those people, it just made me laugh so hard. And then when he quotes Hamilton and that's no one laughs, oh my gosh, that is just like so great.
I love those other two detectives that work with Craig. They're both really, really good too.
One of them was from, Sorry to Bother You, from last year, and I think he's great, but the other one who just would always chime in, oh god, I was cracking up at him.
And he's the fan.
No, keep going.
Yeah. So great.
I even love that we get Frank Oz in this movie as a Christopher Plummer's lawyer.
I love it at the end when they're grilling him. He's like, I literally have nothing else to say.
It really just seems like one of those movies where Rian Johnson's like, hey, I'm going to rent this mansion for a month or two. If you guys want to come and play with
coming
me,
out,
like, let's do this. Like, you know, it would be really interesting in the commentary to find out like if he had these exact people in mind,
right?
Or, you know, if it was offered to other people beforehand, but it does just, it seems like the opposite of Ocean's 12, where Ocean's 12 was, everyone was like, hey, George Clooney rented a yacht. Let's go play. And it was terrible. This is like, hey, Rian Johnson got us a house. Let's have a great time. And you know, that's what it seems like happened. And it's just so great. Can't speak enough about all the ensemble. The only one I would say, and I think it's done on purpose because Walt, the subtext of his character is that he is, in my mind, he's an abusive character. You can get that from that hallway scene. And maybe I'm reading too much into that. But he's got a kid who is alt-right and thinking that he's essentially painted as like a white supremacist. I think that some of that comes from the father. And so his wife has very little to do in this movie. And I think that that's done on purpose.
Yeah. I caught her name. It was, Ricky Lindholm. So that's who but she's the very stereotypical, and Craig, you hit it spot on because she doesn't have much to say. It's almost like she's living in fear and she drinks almost every scene she's in. Yeah. And the fact that the son is withdrawn, there's no emotional context. And you can see that when he's trying to talk to Christopher Plummer about, you know, distributing book rights. And he's like, nope, I'm going to take this off your hands. It's like, you know, he's just such a withdrawn character. And that's what makes Michael Shannon so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mentioned him already, but I think Christopher Plummer, even though he just has that one big scene and then you see him in a bunch of flashbacks, but he looms large over the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
Just anytime you see his portrait or anything, I mean, he really needed to cast someone, you know, of the stature of a Christopher Plummer in order to make that character have the weight it does. And he really, I love those scenes at the beginning where they flash back to all of, you know, the way that Christopher Plummer made every single member of his family have a motive to kill him eventually. And the way that he plays that, you see him be cold with all of them and have such a warmth toward Marta. And it really just helped to define a character that could have easily just been, you know, kind of a, you know, cardboard cutout patriarch. But Johnson was mm-hmm. so smart in casting to do that. As we move on here and talk about our favorite moments, favorite scenes in the movie, once again, I can't reiterate how genius it was to give that whole reveal. Well, most of the reveal, of course, there's stuff that we'll find out at the end of the movie of other things that occurred, but to have that whole scene with Marta and Harlan, just about how he died at the very beginning. And I've seen comments online, you know, complaining about that and how that doesn't make it a real whodunit. I said, well, obviously you all have never seen an episode of Columbo where you see the murder happen at the very beginning and it's all about how he finds it out. You know, there's closed-end mysteries and there's open-ended mysteries. And, you know, and Johnson decided to go this way. And I thought it was a wonderful way of doing that. Any other favorite moments or favorite scenes, Ryan?
So like I mentioned previously, when he's sitting there telling his story as she's giving him the medication, I mean, that scene in and of itself, that is masterclass. That you have got a great veteran actor and you've got an up and comer and just their chemistry. Like I thought I was in the room watching this happen. I mean, it just felt like I was just in a family moment. When Marta makes the realization that she switched the medication and gave him 100 milligrams of morphine, which she did not. That was a blunder by Evans, and I'll get to that in a second. But just that whole scene and how Plummer just like played Harlan to be completely composed, knowing that he's about to die, really was just inspiring to watch. I mean, that's just an actor being the best actor that he is. But in that speech, he mentioned a fake knife. And I'm like, that's going to come into play, you know, whether he actually committed suicide. Because to be honest, everything started with Christopher Plummer committing suicide. He slashes his own throat. Mm-hmm. He didn't really need to, because we later find out that Chris Evans, where Marta thought that she had given him morphine. And so in order to protect her, Christopher Plummer came out with this whole big strategy to get her out of the house, make it seem like she didn't give him an accidental overdose, and he killed himself as a result. I thought that mm-hmm. that was going to be a fake knife, but it turns out that plays later. My other favorite scene is the big reveal at the end and how everything happened. Mm-hmm. We know how Christopher Plummer got her out of the house, but it's Chris Evans who switched the medication so that way Marta would think that she would give an overdose of morphine. But in reality, Marta didn't, because she knows how the bottles feel, like the different density of, or what was what. And I forget how Craig explained it. Evans thought that he was going to trick Marta into killing him. It turns out he didn't. The suicide happened. But then as Evans was backtracking, that's how we find out that Evans was the one who orchestrated everything. So between that scene and the reveal where everything is just kind of playing out, really made the movie, because it made the movie stick together.
Craig?
Yeah, I would say to go off of what Ryan's saying, I would mention the fake knife scene at the end, just the greatest reveal, because they hold it in her so long, like they hold that knife down so long. And then for Chris Evans to just like try to stab her a couple more times. Just so good.
After he's like, shit.
Yeah. But, and you know, I would say the other thing, I'm a Chris Evans lover, obviously, and I love what he was able to do in this movie. But the scene at the bar, because he's showing you that compassion. And so at that point, you're like, oh no, I'm on Team Ransom. And in fact, when they come and they take him away, when they're going around the town the next day, trying to meet who it turns out to be Fran, when they're trying to meet her, and they take away Chris Evans' character, you're kind of like, oh no, like, no, like he was the one that was helping her, you know? And so, I'm not necessarily the best at calling the main plot turn. And I think watching this a second time, it's very much spelled out for you. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that are listening to this podcast or have watched the movie and they're like, oh no, I figured it out. Like immediately, like Ransom doesn't even really show up until halfway through the movie. So it's obviously him, you know, that kind of thing. But truly, when was it that you found out that it was him, or were you actually surprised that it was his character? Like, was it a legitimate oh yeah, that makes sense, like, you know, or was it just like, oh no, I knew that the whole time? Ryan, what about you?
To me, it was, I mean, when he first showed up and the dogs mm-hmm. came up, they had made a comment earlier about how Meg had woken up. Meg was played by the girl from Reasons Why. She had heard the dogs. And then when he showed up, the dogs immediately ran to him. But when the dogs went to other people, it was nice. So I'm like, okay, it's him. Like, I had known. But then that Michael Shannon scene happened in the hallway. I'm like, mm-hmm. well, what if it's him?
Yeah.
I said that exactly to my wife when we were watching it. So, I mean, again, it's all about the how. But, yeah.
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 Yeah, when she finds... Well, when she found Fran all drugged up, in that abandoned whatever it was, you know, I thought, okay. And she was looking up at her and saying, you know, you did this, you know, the Hugh thing, I know it, that kind of, cause I had heard someone call him that earlier in the movie. And I remember that sticking into my head. And I thought, maybe she's not, that was the one thing where I thought, maybe she's not saying you. But yeah, also when they took him away, I thought, okay, this is an interesting development too. But I love that whole police car chase before him, where she just stops midway and they're like, this is the worst car chase in history or something like that. But that whole scene is just great. But yeah, I think, you know, I am reading a lot of reviews where people are saying that, you know, they saw it coming, and I don't know if I buy that or not, but
you know, the thing about people saying they saw something coming is it's really easy to say after the fact.
Yeah.
But like, are you actually like okay enough with yourself that you can say, no, that was a little bit surprising. And again, like you go back in any whodunit movie, the reason why you want to revisit it is so you can see the breadcrumbs laid.
Yeah.
Because I actually had forgotten the scene when Daniel Craig was recapping everything and he mentioned that Meg woke up because of the dogs. I think that they were going through that telling in such quick succession about how, you know, Jamie Lee character's Curtis's character wakes up because of the steps. And so there was one set of steps and then Meg woke up and then, and I had forgotten that they said something to the effect of that the dogs are what woke up Meg, because that would have been a good tell for sure. Yeah. But it's not something that I had thought of.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not as into dogs as I am to cats, apparently, as my cat climbs all over me.
I also
take out my headphones. Okay.
I also love another character we didn't talk about though, is Christopher Plummer's mother in this movie. And I love that she provides a couple of the jump scares in this movie, which I just, you know, I love that they had her, you know, I thought she was going to play a bigger part in like the whole summation than what she did. But I thought she had these really great, I love the scene where Daniel Craig is sitting just talking to her. She's not responding.
The second I saw her, I thought she was the killer. Like, like for sure. I was like 100% sold that she was the killer the second I saw her.
She had a knife and that nice big fur coat she had on.
That's right. Her hat. Obviously, that theory went out the window fairly quickly after. But when they first introduced her, I was like, yep, that's it. Yeah. She's the one.
But And you know, I was thinking about, there's also, aside from scenes, there's shots in this movie that I'm going to remember. The way that Rian Johnson set them up when Marta is out, it's evening, and she and Daniel Craig are out, and I think it's like the garden or something.
Yep.
And he's sitting back, so you don't see him whatsoever until he lights up his cigarette.
Yep.
I love the way that Rian Johnson shot that. That is just absolutely fantastic. And some of the ways that he shoots, you know, the exteriors of the house and everything, you know, is so good. One of the scenes that stands out for me was the reading of the will. I thought that was so expertly handled, and just the way that the hysteria built up as they mentioned, you know, Marta was going to get, she was going to get the rights to all the books, she was going to get the house and all of that stuff, and just the hysteria that it created, and everybody played mm-hmm. that scene must have been a blast to shoot.
It was so great because it showed like their actual human, and because what's great about that scene is it's set up by several of them the day before coming up and saying, we've decided we're going to take care of you. And then they also, you know, the scene that they don't flash back to is the vote on why she couldn't come to the funeral, because they all keep telling her, I got outvoted. But obviously the funny part about that is enough people tell her that they got outvoted, that they wouldn't have gotten outvoted, you know? So, so I'm surprised that that scene didn't get a flashback too, but it's just so funny how dismissive they are of her the entire time until that will's read. And then it just erupts.
I'm not sure the vote even existed, which is probably why we didn't see it. I'm thinking it was just a natural decision that everybody made. But
One thing I wanted to say too was, you know, it's the last bit of mystery, and it kind of leaves us hanging. And it maybe is the true mystery is did Daniel Craig know all along? Because there's that last scene between him and Marta, and he alludes to the fact because we see her tapping her foot a lot. And, you know, it's that last scene where he goes, I always knew it was you. And he taps her foot and you see the blood dot. I mean, we know that stain is there. So did he mm-hmm. always know? Or, you know, I just thought that was a great last illusion in the whole mystery thing.
There's a lot of mystery around that character still, which still fascinates me because he doesn't let you in a whole lot. And it's just, you know, I love at the beginning when they're questioning everybody and he keeps hitting the keys on the piano. Yep. Just so many little details there. Any other scenes that stick out to you or anything else about the way that the mystery was told?
Just everything. It's beautiful.
Everything.
It's great.
It's
great movie. I really appreciated it. And it's just like, you know, it's like the perfect movie to go see just like around this time of year when you're kind of in the middle of all this Christmas craziness and just the world today is just nutty. And so it was just awesome to really thoroughly enjoy myself in a movie theater for 2 hours and 10 minutes or whatever it was. It was great. It was great.
And I love all the little Easter eggs and nuggets that he throws into this movie. Like when she comes home to her mom and her mom's watching Murder, She Wrote, dubbed in Spanish. I love that. Just so good. So good. But let's move on here though, as we're in December here and we're getting towards the end of the year and awards season is looming. And I mentioned to Ryan before we went on here, I was looking it up and this movie is on the top 10 list for the American Film Institute and for the National Board of Review so far for this year. With a lot of high profile stuff coming out the rest of the month here, how do we think this is going to stack up for awards season?
I'll let Ryan go first. I'm going to check out Gold Derby as well. And so I'll look into that.
Globes are coming out Monday. I imagine this is going to be very heavy in the comedy category as it is comedy, which worries me because, you know, anytime it's comedy, it tends to be overlooked when it gets to Oscar, just because there's so many dramatic roles. But I would not be surprised if Daniel Craig is nominated, Ana de Armas, if it gets nominated for Best Comedy, which – mark my words now, it will be nominated for Best Picture. And it will be nominated, Craig, for Best Screenplay. Rian Johnson deserves some credit as a director, but I think it's this year, there's a lot of heavy hitters out there. And I think if Knives Out keeps doing well, it's going to continue. I do see this going far in the Oscars. The art direction with that mansion, the set direction, the cinematography, the way some characters were lit, some weren't. screenplay director, actors. The thing with Daniel Craig is you can make the case that he could either be the lead actor or he could be a supporting actor. His performance was that versatile, and it was that great. But yeah, Craig, that's all I got.
No, I'm just, it's interesting. I'm looking at Gold Derby and, you know, they're the ones that kind of predict or give betting odds at who will be nominated for what. They do not have Knives Out potentially being nominated in any major category, which is just so sad. you know, because there is the Academy likes a certain type of film. We talk about it every single year. There are gems of films out there that are just not going to be on the Academy's radar. What I will say is that this one has a better shot because it's done by, I think, someone that the generally Hollywood likes in Rian Johnson. They probably thought he got a little bit of a raw deal in this whole Last Jedi thing, especially with the fans. And it has just an ensemble cast that just keeps going on and on and on. If this movie would have had Meryl Streep in it, it would be winning every award, right? You know, there's so I don't know. I do hope that it goes for screenplay. I think the best actor is a very stacked category this year. Same with best supporting actor, but it would be cool to see Daniel Craig get it in supporting actor. I think technically you can make the argument that Chris Evans is the lead of this movie and not Daniel Craig. But again, the Oscars do funny things with those categories anyway. I think the person that gets really kind of left out in the cold here that shouldn't be is Marta. I think that she ought to be considered for best actress, but there's no way in my mind that she's going to break into that category.
Yeah.
And so I certainly hope it's nominated for best screenplay. I hope it just wins something, you know, costumes. I mean, I don't care. Like if there's a certain subsect of listeners out there that are going to hate me for saying this, but if Suicide Squad can win an Oscar, this movie deserves an Oscar.
Yes. Okay? Preach.
That is where I'm at. And so hopefully the Academy proves Gold Derby a little bit wrong, and we can just enjoy seeing this whole crew on Oscar night.
Well, this is what's making me kind of think that this might have a shot is this movie reminds me of a movie that came out, well, close to 20 years ago, like around 2000, Gosford Park, which was directed by Robert Altman, huge ensemble cast, except it had its cast was a lot of, you know, those very, a lot of the very high profile British actors that do well at the Oscars. So that had more, even though Robert Altman directed it, it had a very British pedigree. It was written by Julian Fellowes, who wrote Downton Abbey, but it was a murder mystery that had a very political slant to it and everything, which is why I think this could slide in. But then again, our film landscape has changed a little bit in the last, you know, decade and a half. So, although the Academy is somewhat the same, I think the kind of movie that tends to get honored at the Oscars now is a little more cookie cutter than what this movie might be. I don't know.
Especially this year, we've started to have this conversation on the thread, but this year seems so like going back to 90s Oscars. Yeah. You know, you've got a war movie, you've got a mob movie, you've got a bunch of different movies that seem to be very much drawn of a certain there's a costume piece, Little Women.
Yeah.
Plop, best picture. You know, like there's certain like ones that you would just take off of like the treat tray of Hollywood and be like, oh, a Scorsese mobster movie. We've had 25 of those, that kind of a thing. So it does seem like it's going to be a bit of a cookie cutter year.
Yeah. I'm usually pretty good. Like if I go see a movie, I'd be like, okay, this is going to be up for some things, and it will get best picture. I have a very strong feeling about that with how many nominations we have. I think it'll get best original screenplay. It'll get a nod for that. But I think that's, if anything, it's going to be those two. Craig and I had talked earlier about the SAG Awards. Their equivalent for best picture is best ensemble. If there isn't an award this movie should win, it should be that one. That's hands down.
Yeah.
But The Irishman, I mean, it's a very stacked year, but it's stacked with traditional Oscar favorites, which is going to make it a tough year.
Yeah, but that's why this one maybe is also such a nice gem, is because there was hype for this movie, certainly, when the trailers came out and people started to see it. They were like, oh, you should really go see this movie. But it wasn't like the marketing campaign that The Irishman is having, or 1917 is having. You know, like, it's not those types of traditional marketing campaigns, and that's what I kind of appreciated about it. And it made a ton of money. It's well on its way to $100 million.
I think this is a movie that will kind of hold steady during the holiday season, because we had Frozen, you're going to have Jumanji, you're going to have Star Wars, all of these big blockbusters that families will go to see. But this is the kind that, you know, mom and dad can leave the kids at home and go see. This is like the one movie that's come out this year that you can go out and see that's not streaming. So I think, you know, where you'll have like these huge blockbusters winning each and every weekend, I think Knives Out will hold steady at like number two or three for the next few weeks, probably.
It's still going to make money. I mean, I would not be surprised, especially with the winter coming, that more and more people are going to go see this movie, especially with word of mouth.
Yeah.
What's coming?
Winter's coming.
Okay. Well, I just wanted you to do it.
But no, I mean, I think the word of mouth is really going to pick up on this movie. I mean, I've been talking about this movie nonstop, and a friend of mine actually went to go see it 2 days ago. No, sorry, it would have been last night. Sorry. I had a 4-day weekend. And he said the theater was full. And this movie's been out for 2 weeks. So, I mean, yes, you have families taking kids to Frozen, and you're going to have more movies coming out over the holiday season, but there's still people going to see this movie. I mean, it hasn't fizzled out yet, so it's still making money.
Unless Cats comes and blows everything else out of the water.
Lou's going to see that movie 90 times.
Those other movies you talked about in the holiday season, for the most part, are coming out until Christmas Day or later. So many of the traditional, like, again, the 1917s and all these other movies, they're getting limited releases December 25th. That way they can qualify for the Oscars. They're not actually going to go into wide release until January 10th. So Knives Out might have the field to itself for quite a while, because some of those other major pictures, this is where, like, Marriage Story just dropped on Netflix. That probably could have been a competition in the theaters, but because so many of the other prestige or artisan type films are going to streaming services, they might have their own, you know, they might have the field themselves for a little bit here.
Look at what you got coming. I mean, you got Jumanji and Star Wars. I mean, those are going to be kids, but I mean, adults are going to go see Knives Out.
This and Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, I think, should be sitting pretty for kind of the two movies that, you know, adults are more interested in seeing.
I read somewhere that Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is kind of losing steam, though, especially with the award circuit.
Right. Yeah. It's a good, it's been well reviewed, but I think, I don't know, maybe it should have come out at a different time. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's too happy for our times.
I mean, I even read something that Tom Hanks is in trouble of not getting a supporting nod just because the depth or the field is so deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. This is a year, even though, as you said, it looks a little cookie cutter, I think there's enough suspense where we don't know exactly how things are going to go. So it'll be once the Golden Globes hits in January, we'll kind of get a better feel, but we'll see.
We'll know Monday.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to, this is just a jab at Lou. I honestly don't think Cats is going to be nominated for anything.
Just throw that out there. No, it'll be nominated for Best Original Song because they want Taylor Swift to perform at the Oscars. That is a huge amount of ratings they're leaving on the table if they don't nominate her for Best Original Song.
Is she going to do it in her cat suit?
Because the Oscars wants younger viewers, and so to put Taylor Swift on there, you'll get younger viewers.
So. Yeah, exactly. But I do think what's fun about the Oscars this year is that we really have an opportunity to see a lot of these films far more in advance than we would have in the past. And that's thanks to the fact that Netflix and Amazon and all these streaming services are the ones that are providing these. You know, right now, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is coming out for rent like next week or the week after. Yep. I haven't seen that movie yet, but I'm going to get a chance to. You can watch Marriage Story right now. You can watch The Irishman right now. You can see so many of these different films that you don't have to go to theaters to see. Or the problem with a lot of Oscar baity films is that we don't get them in like the Midwest. We don't get them in like actual America. You have to go to a large urban center to be able to see something like Marriage Story. But now we can all watch it tonight if we wanted to. Well, you know, so I think that that's what's cool about streaming services entering into the playing field, because I do think that they make some of these movies more accessible to someone that wants to watch them. I'd love to watch The Irishman. There's no way I could justify spending a half a day watching it in a movie theater. So yeah. I'm happy that I'm able to cut it up. Sorry.
And Renee Zellweger is winning everything for Judy, and that movie didn't come out anywhere near me, I don't believe, or at least not for very long. So, you know, that's something.
But it was early enough to where at least you'll be allowed to rent it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the same with like Rocket Man is already out, and I know that that's lost a head of steam as well. But there's a lot of these films. It just seems like the movies this year are more accessible. And I just mean it in terms of distribution, you know, like, it just seems like we can actually get some of these watched prior to the end of this year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. One thing about, 53rd in Davenport, they're really good about getting a lot of these Oscar movies. And I'm really happy where I am, because truly happy that I can actually watch some of these movies. Because we actually, I don't know if it's a hub. I don't know, but I never thought that we'd ever get independent films like we have been getting, like Waves just came out, and Sterling K. Brown is in talks for supporting, you know, and I want to go see it. What's another one? We got The Farewell. Now, granted, I didn't go see it, but I did watch it when it came to Redbox, and I mean, Redbox, it's everywhere. So, I mean, anybody can go and pick up The Farewell, which is a very funny film, but a very, it's a great dramedy. But yeah, that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah. And the thing about Knives Out is really, you could make a case for a lot of these people in the supporting categories, because everybody has at least one meaty scene that you could use for an Oscar reel. So yeah, it could go either way. But you know, and I wish it would get. I don't know if it'll get all the love that we want it to. But still, it's a movie that I think will easily be remembered decades down the line, just because. He made, even though it's timely in some ways, he did make it timeless in other ways. So kudos all around.
I see this going down as a classic, Brandon. I mean, this is a classic. Yeah. This is a whodunit that we have not had in a while. This is a movie that really plays the mystery, but doesn't. And it's unique, it's original, and I hope to God it gets some love from that.
And I talked about Orient Express earlier, and Kenneth Branagh's doing Death on the Nile, which is coming out next year, and I hope he learned from his mistakes with Orient Express and let the style come through more with Death on the Nile, and let us enjoy it a little bit more than he allowed us to enjoy Orient Express. So as we close here, we'll just do final thoughts on the movie. Craig, we'll start with you.
I've gushed about this movie for so much. I can't do it too much more. What I will now move on my gushing to, I finally took Brandon's advice after so many years. I am finally listening to You Must Remember This, Karina Longworth, who happens to be married to one Rian Johnson. She's incredible. I will tell you, listen to that podcast if you want to know anything about classic Hollywood. Don't allow her voice to turn you off right away, because it does take some getting used to. It just, like, the way that she enunciates words is different than what you're probably used to. And also, she's one of them that I have to listen to at like 1.75 speed, but that's normally just about everybody. I will say, she also, you mentioned you hope that Rian Johnson would write books, Brandon. She also has a book out that just came out not too long ago called Seduction, Sex, Lies, and Stardom in Howard Hughes's Hollywood, which sounds like if you were looking for a Christmas present for Brandon Davis, listeners, this this is the Christmas present to get. It basically is, you should have written like something for the cover of this book, Brandon. It seems like it's right up your alley. So Karina Longworth, You Must Remember This. Check it out if you're looking for an additional podcast. It's very popular. You probably already heard about it, but if you haven't given it the opportunity and the listen yet, I encourage you to do so, because Rian Johnson will also be happy, and so will the rest of the cast of Knives Out, because they probably like his wife Karina Longworth as well.
Nice. Final thoughts, Rian?
Rian Johnson is one of the best orators of our time. He can write a film, and he can write a film well. And if it pisses off Star Wars fandom, I don't care because the guy is good at what he does and his craft when it comes to writing, but more importantly, when he directs that writing, he is a master storyteller. And Martin Scorsese will like this because he is a true crafter of cinema. Yeah. This film felt like old school cinema. I was riveted. I was entertained the whole way through. Not once did I check my watch. Like, all right, how much longer do I got in this movie? He is one up and comer to watch, and it all goes back to him and Brick. Brick is one of my favorite movies of the 2000s. And yeah,
another classic film genre that we don't get enough of anymore. I mean, it was film noir to a T, much like this is a whodunit classic film to a T. The man just loves classic style.
And it's great. Again, and he's good at it. He's very good.
I didn't particularly care for TLJ, but his other films are just great. So I just can't wait to see what he comes up with next.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, it does have that classic feel. It's a movie that would have tucked very nicely into the 70s. I feel like it has that feel to it. So yeah, if you like pure cinema, as Mr. Scorsese would like to say, or if you like just a good fun popcorn movie, this will satisfy either one of those types of moviegoers. Or if you're both like I am, you'll enjoy it as well. So yeah, I can't recommend this movie highly enough. So, and I'm glad we finally got to talk about it and discuss, you know, all the spoilers that we could. So before we leave here though, Ryan, what's coming up for you here on the front row this month?
We are going to be celebrating a true Christmas classic as they celebrate 30 years of awesomeness. That is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. I'm also going to be doing a flashback that November was a rough month for us. I'm going to do two flashbacks. We're going to do When Harry Met Sally, a classic take on what relationships are. I'll be doing that with Front Row's very own Vanessa. So look for those coming up.
Awesome. Craig, what's coming up for you?
Yeah, sure. So Beyond the Mouse, we've been putting out a lot of content. We did All Things Disney Plus, and we did Frozen 2. And so this month we are doing our end of the year wrap up show. Probably one of my favorite episodes that we did all of last year. We just talk about what we loved from the previous year, what we're grateful for, and then also what we're looking forward to in the future year. I just can't wait to record that with my crew. It will probably be a Beyond the Mouse feed only type episode. So make sure you subscribe to the Beyond the Mouse feed. And we'll probably talk a little Rise of the Resistance as well. There's a brand new attraction at Walt Disney World. It looks absolutely incredible. And our very own Brett Rutherford is going to be able to experience, hopefully this month, he'll be able to be on Rise of the Resistance. So definitely follow us for all that information as well.
Awesome. Yeah, and this Wednesday, actually, Eric Flick and I will be reuniting again, and we'll be talking about Christmas in Connecticut for the holiday season.
At what point is that man just going to become your co-host?
I know. I know. You gotta,
Brandon, it's time to just buy the ring. You just go out there. You just got to commit, man. I'm starting to think you might have some commitment issues.
I know.
So we'll, 4 months in a row is that's
the most consistent I've had. Yeah. So we'll be discussing Christmas in Connecticut on Wednesday, and then for the last week of the month before we close out 2019, working on something a little special to commemorate the 80th anniversary of 1939. Lou already did a special podcast on 1994, but I can't let what I think Hollywood's greatest year go by on its 80th anniversary without doing something special. So be looking for that before we ring in the new year. But anyway, this was great. Oh, yeah.
One last thing. I can't believe we've kind of alluded to it, but we are also going to have a lot of coverage around Rise of Skywalker. So make sure that you follow us along for all of that. I know there's a big, a decent sized contingent of us that are going to be going in the first couple of days of the release, and probably do an episode or so on the way up to that release. This is the end of the Skywalker saga as we know it. At least that's what they're telling us now. So it's just something huge. And I am so looking forward to it. And can't wait for December 19th to get here.
Yeah. And we also got award season coming up too. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. We'll that's not till next year.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys go talk about The Irishman. And I'll listen and see what I must have missed in that film.
Awesome. So yeah, as Craig mentioned, keep up with all of our podcasts and everything. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, anywhere else that you want to find us, and we'll just keep driving out the content. So for The Front Row and for Knives Out, I am Brandon Davis.
I'm Craig McFarland.
And I'm Ryan Lutens.
And we will see you in The Front Row.
This episode is a production of The Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for The Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.